is Jim Peek at MySuccessGateway.com, and today I've got a very interesting call with Patrick Wanis, and you can find him at PatrickWanis.com, W-A-N-I-S. Patrick asked me to join him this evening to talk about our society and some of the people in society, specifically celebrities and noted figures, and why a lot of these guys seem to be, I guess, Patrick, it might be self-destructing.
Let's identify some of the people we're talking about. So let's start first with Roger Clemens. And before going into that story, I want to refer to what are the five key human drivers of behavior. And that relates to what we call the reptilian brain. The reptilian brain is that part of our human brain that's the oldest part of our brain. It's probably the most primal or primitive part of our brain. And it consists of five core human emotions: love, lust, hate, fear, and pleasure. Now, what's interesting is how that relates to the way we act today. And key people that are very, very successful in marketing realize that those are five driving emotions. And within those five are what we call lust, vanity, and greed. Now, let's look at some of the things that are happening. In the case of sport, the sporting world, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, and those people that have actually admitted to having used steroids, was it because they wanted to improve their game and say, wow, look how great we are? Or was it about, in the words of Roger Clemens, looking for the edge? I'm always looking for the edge. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because all of us, on an individual level, should be looking for ways that we can improve ourselves. But there's a difference when you're already doing very well and you get to the place of you start to get driven by greed, which is, I've got to do better. Even though I'm being paid millions and millions and millions of dollars, I've got to do better. I've got to be the best. I'll give you another example of another celebrity who said something that...
Well, isn't that insecurity, though?
Part of it could be insecurity, but I think really it's more about greed. I mean, you could say, you know, a person is engaging in whatever behavior based on the need to be better, which comes from inferiority and security. But that's very different to saying, well, I want to just do better. You know, I want to do my very best. I think I can improve. That's different to saying I'm not good enough, so therefore I've got to either do drugs or have plastic surgery operations or increase the size of my breasts or increase the size of my genitals or whatever it is. So, yes,
well,
there is...
I know that Roger had, his father, I think, died or left him when he was a young child, and his mother raised him. I mean, so there's got to be some desire to always prove that to that missing person, that father figure, to get that feeling of being loved and basking in the success of a championship.
And I'm sure what you're saying is true, that if we delve deeper into his background, into his childhood, we're going to see a lot of other potential motivations or a lot of other reasons why maybe he, and let's be careful about him because we haven't found him to be guilty. We're only saying based on his actions and based on his comments, we can only comment on those. But here's what I was going to say. For example, Kanye West recently after the Grammys, after again having been snubbed for an award, made a comment that if his mother was alive or that his mother would still want him to keep doing what he's doing and to become the number one artist in the world. Do you really think that a mother would be saying that to a child? And is that an appropriate thing to say to someone? To say, Jim, your goal in life is to become the number one, whatever, the number one marketer, the number one salesman in the world. Is that really what a parent should tell its child? Or should a parent teach its child to do its very best? Because
Go ahead.
I was going to say, once you say that your goal is to be the best in the world, you are setting that child up for failure and disappointment. That is what leads people to do stupid things to get to somewhere that they can never get to. That's what leads them to this drive of imperfection. Going back to what's happening in the sporting world where so many different players are taking steroids, this is just one indication of something that's happening across our culture because it's also about trying to reach perfection. It comes back to what you said about insecurity. It's about us feeling that we're not good enough. We've always got to do better, got to do more, got to have more. Is that any different to the woman who has many, many plastic surgery operations in the desperate need to stay young, to stay perfect, to attain perfection?
Well, I don't think it's about staying young or staying perfect. I think it's these people seem to care very much about what other people think. And I think they put a lot of emphasis on that.
Well, that's the desire to gain other people's approval and acceptance. That comes from insecurity. That also comes from the way most of us were raised, that we were raised to get our parents' approval and acceptance rather than their support and encouragement, which is very different. When we're raised to get our parents' approval and acceptance, and if we continue living that way as adults, we will never be happy. It will lead to disappointment. And what concerns me is that so many people within the sporting world simply overlooked this. They didn't care because of the greed. If certain players are performing better and better, it's better for the fans, it's better for the sport, it's better for the industry, it's better for branding, and it just generates more and more money. And that, again, comes back to greed. And I think a lot of these actions are driven by greed as well as insecurity. Now, I know
greed is, I think, driven by fear. And I think that we see fear in the media every day.
Fear is a motivating factor. It's a huge motivating factor because we're always afraid of pain. Whatever pain that is, an emotional pain of rejection, not being approved of, not being accepted, physical pain of being hurt, pain of being humiliated. So it is on every level, yes. So all of the negative emotions, Jim, do break down or are eventually broken down into one category, fear. That's true, without a doubt. I'm saying that this is a reflection of what's basically going on in our society. That's the desperation that we have trying to fill the inner emptiness with something outside of us. More money, greater success, bigger possessions, more possessions, more conquests, etc., etc., rather than being satisfied with who we are and then focusing on contributing to others. If I'm a sports person, am I going to say that my greatest contribution is to hit the most amount of home runs ever or to succeed as a sports person, then take that gift and share it with other people by being an example, by being a leader, by being a role model, by being a teacher or a mentor, by going around and talking to schools with a positive message? And I know you wanted to ask me about, you know, Clemens' behavior, and I did watch quite a bit of his appearance before Congress. But there's something that has to be said before he even got there. It's interesting that he went and spent most of the week before lobbying congressmen for his case. It's very interesting because even in the sporting world, we say, what is the greatest defense?
It's an offense.
An offense. And I was completely shocked by how overly confident he was. I mean, almost nothing jaded him, except for one time when there was some emotion. But never did he show any emotion. Now, it's true that a person that's innocent will fight to prove his innocence. But will he have no emotion? Will he just sit there and say that the perfect legal speak? I never, never, never. Pettit is mistaken. He misheard me. He misremembers, which isn't even a correct word.
It is now. It's going to be put in the dictionary,
I'm sure. Yeah. And then the other thing is to say, and this is again is a reflection of our society, and I think there are two reasons for this. We are so scared to admit we're wrong. We're so scared to admit that we did do something wrong, that maybe we lied. And it's interesting because when he was being questioned, I think in the original deposition, he was asked three times, did you ever speak to the trainer about HGH? And the question was asked in three different ways where he clearly said, no, I never, ever did. Sometime later, it comes out, whether it was his own admission or whether the questions were asked, but he admits that his wife was injected with HGH by his trainer, and then he called his trainer and had two heated conversations about the HGH injections with his wife. And yet, when he was asked, have you ever discussed HGH with, I don't know how you say his name, McAnamy, he says, no, I didn't. So what was his response to that question? He says, oh, I never had detailed conversations with him about HGH. But that was never the original question. It was, have you ever had any conversations with him about HGH? Did you ever? Do you recall any conversation? And he says, no, every time. Rather than saying, I didn't tell you the full truth, I lied because I didn't want my wife implicated, or whatever the truth is. Now, this is also the same thing that happened with Larry Craig, Senator Larry Craig, who, on first instance with the policeman, admits, yes, I'm guilty. He pleads guilty, or he pleaded no contest, but basically he pleaded guilty, saying, yes, you know, because the policeman had set him up, and there was a, you know, there was comments that he was making homosexual passes or overtones in a men's bathroom in an airport. Now, first he pleads guilty.
I can't believe we're talking about this. I mean, it's like the fascination of it with the media and the public is just, that's what blows me away.
Now, what do you mean you can't believe that we're talking about this? What is it that gets to you about it?
The way I see it is, if Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds want to shoot themselves up and destroy their bodies with drugs to win the World Series, you know, guess what? Hey, knock yourselves out, guys.
But there's only one problem with that, Jim, and that is that then they become examples for kids who then start to do the same thing, because kids will start to compete with each other, because, you know, one of the male motivations is competition, aggressiveness, assertiveness, etc. And therefore, kids watch these people, and once they find out they're doing it, or when they die and they find out there was all these steroids in their body like they did with the wrestler, then kids will say, oh, we should do it because look at what we can do. I mean, part of the problem is in the testimony before Congress, they were naming the drugs. Now kids will get on the internet and start researching them. They'll find them somewhere.
Right.
So I think there's definitely something to be done. The question is, why wasn't the baseball league doing this rather than Congress?
Well, why didn't they have the Bud Selig in there instead of Roger Clemens? I mean, where's his accountability? Where's George Steinbrenner's accountability? I mean, how come these guys aren't, you know, okay, you take drugs, guess what? Paycheck gets cut. Problem solved. That'll motivate them. These guys are still getting paid full salary. You don't hear anything about them getting, you know, full contract. You don't hear them docking any of that stuff. And
I think you'll find it's the same. I think you'll find it's the same with Michael Vick, but he's still being paid.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there's no, it's just like what's going on in Wall Street, where, you know, these big banks made all these big screw-ups with these subprime loans. Guess what? You know, the CEOs are still sitting in the CEO's chairs in these companies. Yeah, they got slapped around a little bit, but
little accountability and responsibility. Because
and so what's that setting up for the kids?
Well, that's a bad example too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and we're seeing it everywhere in our society.
And this comes back to what I'm saying, that the problem is there's not enough accountability and responsibility of saying, I was wrong, I made a mistake, I'll accept the consequences. Instead, we fight and scream to try and prove our innocence rather than saying, you know what, I'm a human being, I'm imperfect, I made a mistake, I'm willing to accept the consequences of my actions, I'm willing to learn from it. Larry Craig didn't do that, because here he is first saying, yes, I was guilty, then suddenly he says, I know I'm not guilty, then the ethics committee, you know, gives him a good swift kick up the rear, saying that he acted improperly, he still won't step down, so he's saying, no, I didn't do anything wrong. And this is a really bad example. And then you have Jamie Lynn Spears, who's 16 years of age, unmarried and pregnant. Is there anything wrong with that? Well, part of it would be that she's 16. Forget about
hey, look, Patrick, you know, back when we first formed this country, you know, kids were getting married at 16 and having multiple kids by 16. So
that's true, Jim. And if you go back to classical civilization, ancient Rome, children at age 13 were giving birth. However, that's not the problem. The problem today is that we understand that a 16-year-old in today's society doesn't have the emotional and mental maturity to raise a child properly. She might have the money, the financial security, but she doesn't have the emotional security, stability, insight, knowledge, or wisdom to raise a child. And will she be raising a child on her own? Meaning, will there really be a father in the picture? And which then comes to another conversation and topic, which is, I strongly believe that every child needs two parents, not one. However, having said that, Jamie Lynn Spears is in the same place where Roger Clemens and all these other people are. They are role models to other children. My publicist kids, who I believe are, I think, 7 and 5 years of age, watch Zoe 101. So they see Jamie Lynn Spears. She is an idol to millions of children around the country. And how does America respond to what she does? Do they say, look, what she did was wrong, it's not a good example for children, let's not watch? No. The most recent episode featured 12 million viewers. It had 12 million. Last year, it averaged 3.5. It got four times its audience. Is that because parents are sitting there with their kids saying, look, we want you to watch this show, we know it's a great show, but we want to talk to you now about what Jamie Lynn did and how it's wrong, and here's why it's wrong. And it's not about judging her, it's about judging the action, and it's about helping you to take the appropriate precaution. You cannot tell me that a 16-year-old girl can emotionally raise a child and know how to rear it. I don't believe that, particularly when you look at Britney. The whole family is not clear. And the mother's response is, oh, she was always good with curfew. Mum thought that Jamie Lynn only has sex after 10 o'clock at night. It couldn't be done before. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean,
but Jim, there's a bigger point here. The point is that our culture is breaking down because we are letting go of all morals and standards and values. And this is not coming from someone who believes that we have to have every one of our actions monitored and judged. I'm saying we must have parameters. We must have perimeters. We must have boundaries.
Well, Patrick, the reason why it's, quote, breaking down is because this stuff sells newspapers, it sells ads on television, and that's why you see the paparazzi running around like a bunch
of chickens. And what does that come back to, Jim? What's that word that starts with G?
Greed. And greed, I believe, starts with fear. And so, you know, the paparazzi want to get that $50,000 money shot, that picture of somebody kissing somebody else or whatever. They get more stuff. And with them getting more stuff, they feel more secure. So, and it's just feeding on itself. It's a train wreck. I mean, the whole country's in a train wreck.
Well, did you see the movie Apocalypto?
No, I didn't.
It's a very interesting movie by Mel Gibson, and it's basically telling the story of the Mayan culture and how they eventually collapsed. And right at the beginning of the movie is a quote. It's a very powerful quote, which basically says that before a civilization can be conquered from without, it gets conquered from within. And this is a very old quote, but what it's basically saying is what leads to a civilization being taken over by anyone else is when it falls apart within. And that's what's happening to our civilization, to our culture, at least within the parameters of the U.S. culture, the Western culture, because we're becoming so greedy. What's the subprime problem all about? Greed.
Greed.
We just want to get more people signing up, get more loans, get more sales, generate a false economy. Is that any different to Enron or many of the other scandals and fraudulent cases of our time? It was all about greed. And greed.
Patrick,
well,
you're connecting the dots.
Well, it all, and eventually what happens is it leads to the breakdown of civilization. And I know I'm sounding like, you know, a preacher now, but I'm saying that when we let go of all of our morals and values is when we begin to see the decline of a civilization. Go back to history. Look at ancient Rome, all of them. It's when they no longer had any level of morals or values. There were no perimeters. There were no boundaries. We need to put those back in place.
Well, Patrick, we're a, quote, nation of laws.
They're two different things. We might have a lot of laws, but we don't have enough accountability. I'm saying that on an accountability and responsibility begins on an individual level. This is when parents have to set the example to their children. This is when parents have to monitor their children. This is when parents have to spend less time trying to get the larger flat screen TV or the latest Hummer and spend more time trying to get to know their children, get involved in their children's lives to find out what does your children think and feel? What morals and values and principles are you raising your children with? Do they understand the real difference between right and wrong? Innately, we do know the difference between right and wrong, but if we don't have anyone holding us accountable, particularly when we're children, then we won't care about what's right and wrong until we then have to pay for the consequences of our actions, and eventually we do. If we don't pay for them on an individual level, we pay for them on a societal level. And it really comes down to the individual. And don't expect your children to be doing this to themselves, to be policing themselves. It's up to parents to get involved and to watch their children and to sit down and teach their children what are the consequences of all of your actions, and to stop all the time trying to compete with everyone else around you and all the time comparing yourself to everyone around you. And children are learning this from their parents. Parents are doing it and kids are learning it. The whole way that we are moving to such a material-driven society where we think our only happiness and joy is going to come from more money and greater possessions, that whole concept is being driven by parents, not by children. And it's the parents who actually design the objects and the gadgets that the children will then say to mum and dad, buy this for me. And they watch their parents doing it, you know, wanting to get more stuff for the house, more stuff for the car, bigger TVs, et cetera, et cetera. So what do the children do? They copy them.
Right.
We
right.
are
yeah, you
creating
know,
this.
Yeah, my kid wants a Wii, you know, video game so badly. You know, and I've seen him operate video games, and I'm just like, you know what, he turns into a monster when it's time to go to dinner or something, and I'm just not going to get one for him.
As long as you sit down and explain to him why, I think that's the most important thing, that you sit down and explain to them why. What is the significance?
Right.
You know, why you're saying to them, look, you don't really need it. That you help them to also gain some sense of a conscience. We don't really have too much of a conscience because we're so caught up in being greedy. And I think that's the greatest problem that we have today, Jim, that we need to come back to ourselves and establish our values. And the problem is that even within religions aren't staying true when your leaders of various churches are breaking the law or not being true to themselves out of greed. When various churches say, we don't have to be accountable to the IRS, we can make millions and millions of dollars of profit and we can give it to ourselves.
Well, look at the Catholic Church with the...
pedophilia.
Where's the accountability there? I mean,
now you have to ask yourself,
You don't hear the Pope bitch slapping those guys.
And this is the question you have to ask yourself. Why, for so many years, did it want to hide it? Why did it just move them from one parish to another? Why didn't it make them accountable and responsible? Why didn't it say, you need help? Whatever the reason is that they're doing it, find out. Number one, keep the children safe. Number two, step in and then help these people so they don't do it again. There are two factors. Step one is, first, keep the children safe. Step two, now help the perpetrators so they'll stop doing it. It's not enough to lock them in jail, because let me tell you, one in three girls have been abused, were molested as children. One in three. That means there's a lot of molesters out there that most people don't know about. Are they getting help? And it was, you know, and it's interesting because most of the people that are molesters were molested as children themselves. I haven't done enough research into the case of the priests that were pedophiles, but outside of the church institution, almost all of the people that molest children were molested themselves. The girls that were molested as children usually grow up and go one of three ways. They become prostitutes, strippers, or porn actresses. Two, they enter into relationships where they're being abused again and again, and sometimes they can be strippers and be in relationships where they're being abused again. Or three, they end up becoming highly promiscuous, as I said, in the strippers, prostitutes. And then what happens when they get children, they start to take it out on their children, and they'll project that abuse in a different way. They may not actually sexually abuse their child, but they'll emotionally or verbally abuse that child. And these
right.
are patterns that can only be stopped when you start getting to the root cause. And that's why I'm coming back to the entire topic that we began this conversation with, greed, and getting down to the human motivations and getting down to accountability and responsibility. I mentioned there before about the quote from the historian and philosopher Will Durant, a great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. And that's the whole point. We need to put the stops in place right now because we're being conquered from within. We're losing all sight of everything that's significant. And that's why, Jim, so many people are on medication. 50 million people, I think, ingest 3 medications a day. And I'm talking about prescription medication. I'm talking about antidepressants, anti-anxiety, sleeping pills.
It's mind-boggling how many drugs are being peddled as Clinton administration, when they passed the law that drugs can be advertised on TV, the pharma industry grew from 300 billion strong to 602 billion strong 8 years later. So, and it keeps growing exponentially. And so, but again, it comes down to greed, it comes down to money, and it comes down to lobbyists and Washington's for sale. It's not a pretty picture.
The only solution to this, when people say, well, what's the solution? Okay, Patrick, Jim, you guys have been talking for so long, and it's all great. We've all gained insight and understanding. But what's the solution? You have to start on an individual level. Parents,
and you know what? Guy Fidley said the same exact thing. You start with yourself.
Because yes, that's the only place you can start. You can't change anyone else, but you can start working on changing yourself. And when I talk about change, I'm talking about whatever the change is required for you. I'm not saying, well, you're bad, you have to change who you are. I'm saying begin to work on yourself. And if you're a parent, then your first responsibility is to your children. So you start monitoring what they're watching. You start helping them to develop their own thoughts, because children are sponges and they'll absorb everything you say and tell them. They'll be watching you and copying you. Whether they, even if they're rebelling against you, at a subconscious level, they're going to end up becoming like you. When children turn into adults and become parents, they end up saying to their children the very things that they heard as children.
So true.
This is the kind of therapy that I end up doing with most of my clients, helping them to realize when your parent was saying or doing horrible things to you, your parent was simply repeating what was done to them. But here's the good news. You can stop the pattern.
You can break the cycle.
That's step one, stop the pattern. Step two, of course, is also understanding it had nothing to do with you. There's nothing wrong with you. Therefore, you can get to the place of forgiveness, compassion, and being set free. However, to summarize, it comes down to one thing. You have to start with yourself. Monitor yourself. Become accountable and responsible to yourself. Jim, every day we have the temptation to do something. And I'm not talking about temptation in the sense of we're going to be judged from heaven and hell. I'm saying that we have the temptation to do what we know inside of us is right or wrong. We know whether it's right or wrong to steal that thing, to steal from the company, whether it's a block of paper or whether it's some pens, or and it might be something small, it might be something bigger. And I remember when I used in back in Australia, I remember working with people and they'd say, well, this is a huge company, man. They're not going to notice a couple of pens or a couple of bucks, because people would use the excuse to themselves that it's a faceless corporation, therefore it's okay. But regardless of whether you're stealing from an individual or from shareholders, you still have to live with yourself. So you're making the decision. And so it's about becoming accountable and responsible. If you're in a relationship, the temptation's there to cheat. Maybe you've had an argument with your boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife, and here is the loving, listening friend who suddenly opens their heart and then maybe is prepared to open something else about themselves. You still have the power and the opportunity to say no. So every day we're faced with various temptations to do what we innately know is wrong. And we have to make that decision and say no. So someone offers you steroids so that you can become bigger and perform better because he happens to be your trainer, and you can say no. So many of us are scared to say no. That comes back to the fear that you were talking about. Sometimes we're scared to say no because of fear of rejection, or we want the other person's approval, or we want to please other people, we want their acceptance or their validation, we want to belong. Sometimes we're scared to say no because we're too busy trying to become greedy, because we get to the place where we're just self-promoting and self-perpetuating. Again, it's an individual decision. We have the power in every moment to say no. Having said that, I know we're all going to make mistakes. I have.
No matter who was the president or who's going to be the president, you know, I've been wanting to interview these presidential candidates, but, you know, one of the things I would ask them is, like, you know, okay, so in the office, what are you going to do to work on yourself?
Well, I doubt that they would say. I'd be curious to know what anyone would respond to that. The average person, Jim, doesn't work on themselves.
Right, but you would think that the leader of the free world would require some sort of self-inspection. And
that can only come back to one thing, and that is, I know I use the term accountability and responsibility, but it comes back to having your own values. You have to set up for yourself your own laws, morals, standards, and values. Not that they're going to be contrary, you know, contrary to society's values, that yours will be less than theirs, but you have to have some for yourself that at least will monitor your own actions. Because you know what? Society may not say to you it's wrong to steal a pen and a block of paper, but if you decide that it is and you live according to that, then you can walk away feeling good. If you're in a relationship and your partner cheats on you, but you remain faithful and loyal and you did everything that's right, you can walk away and say, I did my best. And yes, I can feel okay about myself because I was loyal and faithful, because I didn't give in to the temptation. Because it's easy for us to give in to momentary pleasure. Remember I talked about love, lust, hate, fear, and pleasure. It's easy for us to give in to something that offers us pleasure, what we call instant gratification, not realizing that those consequences can be painful and for a very, very long time. So get clear about what are your values, what are your morals, what do you believe to be right and wrong. And the interesting thing, Jim, is that once you start living according to what you believe to be right and wrong, you start living according to your own morals and values, you have less stress in life, you're more relaxed, you feel better about yourself, and then on top of all that, you walk with your head up. You feel good about who you are. This is not about feeling superior to anyone, but you feel okay with who you are. And you feel you actually have more confidence. You'll have more confidence when you are true to yourself, when you maintain your integrity. Because right. Then you say, I know who I am, and I'm okay with who I am. Integrity is an important part of self-confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's I'll be honest with you, Patrick. I struggle with it myself, you know. Everything from, I'm going to go on that bike ride, I'm going to go down to the gym. The integrity of when I say to myself I'm going to do something and I don't do it.
Your word is very important, and I have found myself sometimes to make promises that I wish I didn't make, but then I know I've got to keep it or call that person and discuss with them and say, I promised I would help you out with this. Here's the challenge I face. And at least face it, rather than just running away or doing what so many people do, which is just, ignore the phone, don't answer the phone, or just ignore the whole thing and hope that it goes away, that it'll sort itself out, which is, the hide. Go and put your head in the sand. It doesn't work. And if anything is to be learned from Senator Larry Craig, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, any of these people, whether you judge them to be guilty or not guilty, at the very least, the greatest thing that we can learn is to be truthful and honest and admit when we've made a mistake. Say, I'm sorry. And the rest of society, it's up to us to say, we accept the person that made a mistake. Maybe we say, well, you can't keep that position anymore because the position we've put you in is a position where we need to be able to trust you 100%. But we also don't have to condemn them forever. We can give them another chance.
Well, I don't think it's our place to judge people as well, right?
Jim, we all do make judgments of some nature. We say this is good.
I think that's almost like survival type of mechanism.
Well, you need to have some sort of judgment. Because even when you're saying this is right and this is wrong for me, that is a judgment. I mean, a judge decides whether a person is guilty or not guilty, decides whether the person is right or wrong. So judgment isn't only about deciding that something's bad. When we use the term judgment, we're usually saying he's judgmental, meaning he's very critical, he's very harsh, he's very condemnatory, he sees a lot of things as being bad. That's what we often think about when we think of judgment. There are some times when we need to say, look, you're in a position of trust. You're a male teacher that's working with a large group of female students, and you have shown us that we can't trust you. We can't leave you in that position.
Right.
We'll forgive you, but you have to regain your trust, but you can't regain it in that position. That's a judgment that's made for protecting other people and also saying to this person there are consequences for your actions. In a relationship, I remember once saying to a girl, look, I'm not going to necessarily judge you for what you did, but please understand there are consequences for your actions. If you choose to betray me, if you choose to ignore me, there are consequences. I don't necessarily have to judge you, but I can say, this isn't for me. This is not the relationship I want, or this is not the way I need to be treated, and I walk away. That's the consequence of the other person's actions. There are consequences for all of our actions. So I guess, Jim, in wrapping up the call, maybe what we need to learn is to start looking at ourselves, the same message I always give to people. Please look inside you. Find out what is driving you to do the things you do. And it's usually because we don't think we're good enough, we think there's something wrong with us, and we're hoping that if we can do something outside of us, whether it's get more, be more, have more, do more, we think that we'll become happy and we might like ourselves more. The key to liking yourself, the key to feeling good about yourself, is to admit who you are. Look at all your strengths and weaknesses, forgive yourself and for everything you've done and everything you haven't done, and then forgive everyone around you for whatever they've done and what they haven't done. I'm not saying that's easy, but it's what we need to do.
And, you know, we talk about this at MySuccessGateway.com is the three keys to success is the first one, investing in yourself, which is spending time on a call such as this. Second, get a mentor, get a coach. So learning from people like Patrick. And third is to expand your extended network. And, you know, we've got plenty of people here on My Success Gateway, and we've got links out to a whole bunch of other people and learning from more people.
And all you need to do is to be open and willing, and the teacher will appear, whether it's a book, an audio tape, a podcast, a message that you see on the internet. Somehow the message that you need will come to you. Just say, you know what, I'm ready to make the change.
Ben Franklin said, and we'll close with this, and I'll paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me, but I've got it on Success Gateway in our daily quotes, and something to the effect that if we're open to new opportunities as quickly as we tend to reject them, then we'll see a lot of positive things start happening in our lives.
Be open to opportunities, and the opportunities will open to you.
Patrick, this has been great. I can't thank you enough. This is Jim Peek at My Success Gateway signing off with Patrick Juanes, the celebrity life coach and the woman expert. And you can find him at patrickjuanes.com, and he spells it Patrick, W-A-N-I-S. Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Jim.